Welcome to the Non-Alcoholic Drinks Podcast, helping you navigate the ever-growing world of what non-alcoholic drinks have to offer by bringing you the latest news, interviews, and drink reviews. Now, here is your host, Jonathan Lambrianidis.
Hello, and thank you so much for joining me on the Non-Alcoholic Drinks Podcast, brought to you by TippleZero.com, where we believe enjoying a drink is all about the taste and the company you're with. This is the podcast for anyone looking to take the guesswork out of what non-alcoholic drinks to try next while staying up to date with all the latest news, information, and new releases. My name is Jonathan Lambrianidis, and today's episode of the Non-Alcoholic Drinks Podcast is supported by Brunswick Aces, the creators of Australia's first non-alcoholic gin, the founders of Australia's first non-alcoholic bar and bottle shop, while being the online home of non-alcoholic. They stock a range of non-alcoholic beer, wine, and spirits from all over the world. So to find out more, head over to brunswickaces.com and choose how you drink, not if you drink. Alrighty, on today's episode, I'm continuing the global theme and headed to the UK, at least figuratively for now, and I'll be joined by Rob Fink, founder and CEO of the world's first non-alcoholic brewery, Big Drop Brewing Co. Today, I'll be chatting with Rob about how Big Drop got started, the way Rob and the team have really seen the non-alcoholic landscape grow and their role in it as well. And of course, we'll be talking about the products, how they're made, where they're made, and what's available down here in Australia. So if a globally awarded, five-star rated non-alcoholic beer is your thing, or you're just looking to learn a little bit more about who Big Drop are and how they got down to Australia, grab a drink, stick around, and you're really going to enjoy what Rob has to say. Hey, just before we get into the interview with Rob, just wanted to say if you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet, that would be amazing. You can do that in your podcast app and you'll stay up to date with the latest new releases and interviews just like this one. As always, I've taken all the notes for you and they'll be listed over at tipplezero.com/session05. And with that, let's get into today's episode and our chat with Rob. Hi, Rob. Welcome to the Non-Alcoholic Drinks Podcast. It's really great to have you today.
Thanks very much. Good to be here.
No, awesome. I'm really excited to talk to you. As you know that Australia is a little bit behind the curve in terms of non-alcoholic drinks, and Big Drop has kind of been at the forefront of that movement globally, especially in the UK. And at least for me here in Australia, the Pine Trailer was that kind of first foray into non-alcoholic craft beer. And it's just really amazing to have a beer which was so nice as a different approach. I mean, have something which has actual bitterness in it. And it's become one of the beers that I actually take and accidentally on purpose leave at friends' houses and often get text a week or two later saying they ran out of beer or they were still in lockdown and they actually tried it and they were knocked off their socks. They couldn't believe it actually tasted like normal beer.
Well, this is great. Thank you for your help in spreading the word. That's appreciated, yeah.
It's a beautiful beer and good one to get started on. But to get people up to speed, it would be great to learn a little bit how you went from a lawyer working in your own firm in downtown London to having a non-alcoholic beer brand, which has beer in the hands of people literally all over the world.
Yes, a bit weird that, isn't it? Who knew? Yeah. So I was indeed, for my sins, a lawyer in London. I did indeed start my own law firm with another guy. He did most of the hard work and I did most of the business development. I know that you work in-house, but if you're in private practice, you've got to spend a lot of time out there schmoozing and pressing palm and whining and dining. And in central London, there's quite a lot of whining and dining. So I'd spend many an afternoon in the pub, propping up the bar with brokers and underwriters and other nefarious sorts, and then go out for dinner in the evening with people. You know, business development is the technical term. There's worse ways to earn a living. But then I had my first son in 2014. 2014 he was born. And basically, I just knocked the booze on the head for about 6 months after he was born, because fundamentally, you can't go out drinking all afternoon in the pub and then go home and change nappies or give babies baths, because their mothers don't like that. They're not that keen on that if you turn up 7 pints down, 3 sheets to the wind, and say, yeah, no, I'm absolutely going to bath the baby. Trust me, it's absolutely fine. They don't like it. So I knocked it on the head. So I just didn't drink for 6 months, but I still had to go to the pub because it was my job. Genuinely, that was a big part of my job, was going out and getting business. And the way that you did that in the city of London, in the business I was in, was going to the pub with people. But you can't stand in a pub all afternoon and drink orange juice or cola or coffee. You know, you can have one. That's fine. But if you stood there for 5 hours chewing the fat with people, you want a beer in your hand. So I ended up buying, no brands here. Let's be polite. But I ended up buying the sort of the most widely available non-alcoholic beer in the UK, which actually came in little 275ml bottles. So you could buy two of them, pour them in a pint glass, and you stood there and you're drinking a lager. It was a lager. And actually, if it was cold, it was all right. You know, it wasn't horrible. It wasn't great, but it was all right and it was drinkable. But the thing for me was that I'm not really a lager drinker. By no means am I a craft beer expert, or I was going to say geek has not necessarily got negative connotations anymore. But you know what I mean? I'm not particularly knowledgeable. I wasn't particularly knowledgeable, should I say. But I did prefer to drink like pale ales or IPAs or darker beers. Given the choice, I'd probably always drink a darker beer over a lighter beer. And I looked and I looked and I looked and I could not find anywhere in the country or indeed the world a non-alcoholic pale ale or a non-alcoholic IPA or the beer that I was missing, which was a non-alcoholic stout. Couldn't find it anywhere. And so that is a very long introduction to me saying to myself, why has nobody done non-alcoholic craft beer? It doesn't exist as a category. Why don't we give it a punt? And that was the beginning.
So the way that it all started was just literally from the fact that you had the change in your lifestyle. And that's kind of the thing that so many people have touched on, that they've had children or just the sport in general or a change in lifestyle. And then all of a sudden they've got no knowledge in the space, but then they're like, you know what, I'm going to make it better. I'm going to be the one that drives the change. And it sounds like you took that on. And when you did that, did you have any background, or was it just what so many of us do and hop straight to our phones or our laptops and just head straight to Google?
Oh, there was a lot of Googling. There was a lot of Googling. Yeah, absolutely. So I found there was a couple of companies at the time in the UK that were selling purely non-alcoholic beers, wines. Non-alcoholic spirits didn't really exist other than Seedlip. So I got in touch with those guys. One of the guys lived down the road from me, completely randomly met up with him and had a chat. And then through a very long process of elimination, eventually found a little brewery in East London that had a very small kit that you could do test brews on, which is about 700 litres. Because the issue for me was I didn't have the money to build a brewery. Like, you know, if you want to build a brewery, it's, you know, $500,000, something like that. I'm sure you can do it cheaper, but, you know, that's the rough kind of number. I didn't have that number. No investor was going to give me that, because the whole idea of non-alcoholic craft beer was everyone thought I was a complete moron. It was like, why would you even think about this? You know, this is not a thing. So I needed somewhere that could brew the beer for me. So I found this place, again, on Google, went down there, had a chat with them. They were like, yeah, there's 700 litres. So it's called contract brewing. So we don't own a brewery. So we brew our beer locally in the markets that we sell it. So we brew it in Australia. So the beer that you're drinking in Australia is brewed in Australia. But there was a gap in the UK for medium-sized brews. So if you want a contract brew, really, you need to be doing 10,000 litres, which is about 30,000 bottles of beer. And my idea, I didn't know that there was even a market for it, let alone how to get it to market. So I couldn't do that. So eventually found this guy, had this little kit. But then the other issue was I didn't know how to brew beer. That was quite a big hurdle that you need to overcome. But happily, at this place in East London, in Bermondsey, there was a guy called Johnny Clayton, who was a very well-regarded brewer. And he developed all the recipes for us then. And he now works full-time for us as our head brewer.
Yeah, right. So literally just an approach to jumping onto Google, finding a contract brewer, and then you've kind of had Johnny on board since.
Yeah, exactly. Asking people questions, doing some Googling, doing some research, and then just getting on with it, really, yeah.
So it sounds like when you kind of made that decision back in 2014-15, the idea of Big Drop began forming and the demand for alcohol-free beer was there, but the craft scene wasn't really established and it wasn't really an option. And I guess on the back of that, it sounds like Big Drop did for non-alcoholic beer what craft did for the whole beer industry.
That was, you've hit the nail on the head, and that's always how I describe what we're trying to do. We are literally trying to do for non-alcoholic beer what craft beer did for beer. And I don't know what beer was like historically in Australia. I think from what I know, it's a little bit like what happened in the UK, which is that I worked in a pub in the mid-90s, and like pretty much every single pub in the entire country, you could buy, I mean, let's name, no, not because I'm not knocking them, because I used to drink Carlsberg like it was going out of fashion, but you know, you could buy Carlsberg, Stella, Guinness, Strongbow. And then if you were lucky, you might get a cask ale from the local brewery. But that was it. And now any pub in the country you'd walk into in the mid-90s, that's what you would get. And then we had our own craft beer revolution. And you have to use the air quotes around that because it's a controversial statement. And that was because you had companies like BrewDog, Camden Town, Thornbridge, Meantime, Brewing, Pale Ales, IPAs, you know, they were taking their inspiration from the US and it completely flipped it on its head. So that now you go into a pub in the UK, pretty much any pub in the UK, and there will be a decent selection of craft beers in the fridge, certainly in the fridge, and you know, you're going to get a couple on draft as well. But from a non-alcoholic perspective, if you're standing there at the bar and you're looking at that selection, in the corner, you've got that non-alcoholic lager. And when I was looking at it, I was like, okay, that's only a small sector, but that's like beer in the 90s in the UK. So let's just do craft non-alcoholic beer. It makes sense. So it was always this thing. It was like, I'm not sure that I thought that the market was going to be as big as it is. And I didn't really start it because I was some kind of, never describe me as a visionary because I'm certainly not. But I was always like, somebody's got to drink this. You know, if we can make good craft non-alc beer, people will drink this because people drink non-alcoholic beer and people drink craft beer. So let's put it together and see what happens.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, right? Because what I've picked up from places like the UK and then more likely Spain as well, they've got this view that non-alcoholic beer is actually, or non-alcoholic drinks, especially for Spain in terms of wine more generally, they've got the view that they're out and about for much longer than we are down here.
Yeah.
And their culture is such that they can't be on the booze all night. They can't be getting hammered from 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon and go all the way through to 3 a.m. in the morning.
No.
And it's kind of one of those things which they use to complement and supplement it, right?
Completely. Spain, and it's really interesting about where Big Drop works and where it doesn't work, because both Spain and Germany, about 15% of their total beer volumes are non-alcoholic. Compared to the US, it's about 0.3%. UK is about 1%. Australia is probably 0.something%, but is, you know, is catching up. It's, you know, that's it's growing. But we don't work. Big Drop doesn't sell in Spain and Germany. And we tried and we were like, oh, yeah, this is going to be shooting fish in a barrel. They understand non-alcoholic beer. So we're just going to go there and we're just going to sell them this great non-alcoholic beer. But it comes back to this point that Big Drop is craft beer and Spain, they drink lager. That's what Spaniards drink. So they get lager. If you try and sell them an IPA or a stout, they look at you weird. I mean, don't get me wrong. There is a tiny, tiny craft beer scene in the cities like in Barcelona and in Madrid, but it's not in any way like it is in Australia, the UK or the US. And it's the same in Germany. So whilst the Germans produce some of the finest beers on the planet, they don't drink IPAs or stouts. They drink Pilsner. They drink wheat beer. It's not beer that maybe you or I would describe as craft, even though their breweries are largely independently owned. They've been doing it for hundreds of years and their beer is amazing. So it doesn't work in those countries. Whereas the countries that we pick to go into, basically it's Scandinavian countries, Australia, Canada and the US, because all of those countries, they understand what we're doing in an alcoholic context. So then it comes back to this point that it's like, yeah, that's great. You're drinking alcoholic IPA, pale ale, stout, brown, whatever. We're just doing a non-alc version. The places where we work are places where they've had a craft beer revolution, again, using the air quotes.
So it's kind of where the taste is already there for the IPA or for that kind of craft beer. And that's really interesting because I spoke to Ronald Vanderstreek, so one of the brothers who's behind Vanderstreek, and he said the same thing. They started brewing their Playground IPA in Germany and said that he was talking to the brewer there and essentially had to go through 10 reasons or 7 reasons why they shouldn't put hops in beer. And we're having that back and forth with the Germans. So that makes sense that you've mentioned that it only works in where there's actually an appetite for that type of beer. Interesting piece to hear about the way that non-alcoholic drinks are utilized around the world and how different companies and cultures embrace them and really take advantage of the opportunity that is out there. We went on to have a little bit of a chat around the way that the UK embraces these and how things are looking from an in-venue scene, so from a pub scene, and what you can expect from them in the UK going forward. And this is a really cool insight because hopefully it leads us to a position where we're able to follow suit and have a similar level of exposure in our pubs and our restaurants going forward. So have a listen to what Rob has to say and hopefully it gives you some ideas around how you can get some drinks into your favorite pubs and bars as well. Note again, in terms of the space, more generally in the UK, how have you seen that grow since Big Drop have kind of come into the fore? Because it sounds like it's also kegged, right? Which means there's an appetite for it in venue.
Yeah, totally. We're probably less so because of lockdowns and COVID and everything else. But I'm just trying to think back to pre-COVID times, but it, so what is 2020? So the end of 2019, the beginning of 2020, people were asking me what's next for non-alcoholic beer. And my immediate answer was draft. We were starting to see the pub groups go, oh, right, okay, this is a good product. It's a premium product. It's not a distressed purchase. It's not the thing that you sell to the pregnant lady or the driver. It's a conscious choice from people who are, for whatever reason, doesn't matter what, just not on the booze. Or maybe they're, oh, it's an Australian phrase, I think, a wedgie. So you have a beer, then a soft drink, then a beer, then a soft drink. And I love that. So it's like, and they're like, oh, yeah, Big Drop's the wedgie beer. We get it. Okay, that's fine. It's like, yeah, absolutely. So we were starting to see the pull through from the pub groups to put it on draft. And then COVID hit, lockdowns, everything else. And now, just like everywhere else, our, you know, on-premise, on-trade sites are just coming out of that, and they're less, they're just sort of reestablishing themselves. So they're not that fussed about taking a chance on putting non-alcoholic beer on draft. But we're starting to see trial from the pub groups. You know, they're testing out different brands, they're testing out different ways of serving and all the rest of it. And I think we'll get back to that position where in the UK there is that traction. And my ambition is that in due course, just like now, if you walk into a decent pub, there will be a craft beer on draft. You walk into a decent pub and there will be a non-alcoholic beer on draft. And I'd love that to be Big Drop, but you know, there will be other brands are available. I think that that's the obvious trajectory that the sector is going on.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where it's going. And you've got the stability rounded out that allow the beer to be in a keg and then can be transported as well. And it also sounds like the markets internationally are looking to kind of start growing their presence, especially I noticed it down here that we're looking to really expand our presence in venue and trying to get people more or venue owners more into tune with the fact that these options are available. And there are a few people down here that are doing that really quite well. And it just feels like in terms of the international presence, have you found that it's been easy enough to have your contract brewers locally brew that for you and help get the product out there?
There are plenty of problems with contract brewing as a business model, but I have to say that I always thought that there was an international opportunity because craft beer, broadly speaking, defines itself by provenance. So it talks about where it's from, yeah? And that was because craft beer was a reaction against big beer, which doesn't talk about where it's from at all. I bought a can or a couple of cans yesterday of my favorite US craft beer in my local corner shop because it's a big beer. It's widely available. I bought it and I looked at the back of it and I saw it was brewed in Belgium. So you can probably guess which company's brewing it now. And I was like, oh right, okay. Because big beer they're not fussed about where it's brewed. They're you know, you're buying a brand. So craft beer was the reaction against that. But with Big Drop, we never talked about where we were from. We talked about the fact that we were non-alcoholic. That was our USP. That's what we talked about. And then I sort of thought, well, we're not going to build a brewery because I can't afford to build a brewery. That's just a simple fact. So I'm going to contract brew it. So I was like, well, hang on a minute. So if I brewed it in Australia or the US, then it is an Australian beer or a US beer because it's brewed in Australia by Australians using, broadly speaking, Australian ingredients. And there's a Big Drop company in Australia. So heaven forbid, should we ever make any profit, then we'll pay tax in Australia. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, you're drinking Australian craft beer. And I was like, well, that's brilliant. That's genius. So I can go out and say, yes, yeah, I'm English, but you're drinking Australian beer. And it's only through contract brewing that we're able to do that. Because if we owned a brewery in the UK, we'd be talking about how we were a British beer. And then we'd either have to ship it, which is not ever good for beer, especially non-alcoholic beer, or we'd have to then outsource it. And then you're compromising your brand message, which is we're a local beer. So the contract brewing has definitely helped and it's allowed us to scale up very, very quickly. So I can never remember the numbers, but if you think in the first year of Big Drop, we sold like 1,500 pints of beer. And then I think last year we sold like 1 million pints of beer or something in the space of 4 years. And we're probably going to double in size every year for the next 2 or 3 years. So any brewery that we would have built at the beginning would have been redundant within a year. And then I've got to build another brewery. And then I've got to build another brewery. And then I've got to build another brewery. And you're not concentrating on growing your company. You're just concentrating on buying bigger stainless steel tanks to brew beer in.
And I think that's a really good way of doing it, right? Because it just means that you've got the ability to focus on what consumers want, which is the beer.
Yeah.
And then you buy in the expertise at the other end of it. And from your end, you've helped establish the market in the UK and then through the contract brewers being able to spread that message through to the world. And I feel like given Australia was quite a way behind in the whole non-alcoholic space, we've really been reaping the benefits of what the world has really enjoyed prior to us. And down here, I know we've got the Uptown Craft Lager, the Pine Trail Pale Ale,
yep,
the Paradiso, the Citra, the IPA, and the Galactic Milk Stout.
Yep.
So it would be good to learn a little bit around the range, but more broadly, what the very first beer that you guys launched was.
So you've got the core, what we call the core range down there. So you're covering a multitude of sins. Oh, my PR guy will kill me if I don't mention that Uptown Lager won silver in the Melbourne Beer Awards and the Pale Ale won a bronze in the Melbourne Beer Awards. Otherwise, he's going to listen to this and he's going to be like, you did an Australian podcast and you didn't mention the Melbourne Beer Awards. What are you doing? So there you go.
As you've just heard, the whole Big Drop range continues to be quite successful globally, and it's winning quite a number of awards. So what I'll do is I'll link the whole range in today's show notes over at tipplezero.com/session05, and I'll also include a couple of those links to the awards they've won recently too. But next up, I ended up chatting to Rob a little bit about the range they've got down here in Australia and also the traits of each of those beers. So let's hop back in and have a chat to Rob about the traits that each of the Big Drop range beers have to offer down here in Australia.
So you've got the core four beers. So you've got the lager, which is, it's a bit of a darker lager to give it a bit more backbone than, it's really difficult to make good non-alcoholic Pilsner style lager. Because there's nowhere to hide. The thing with non-alcoholic beer is that it doesn't have the alcohol in, so therefore, by definition, it will be thinner. We compensate for that with sometimes maltodextrin, which is a non-fermentable malt product, or sometimes lactose, which is a non-fermentable sugar. But if you don't compensate for it, then it can be really thin. And Pilsners, talking about, you know, your German friends with not wanting to put hops in beer, there are no big aromas there in Pilsner. So it's really, really difficult to do. So our lager is a little bit darker to give it a bit more backbone. And then the pale ale and the IPA, just really great light versions of the style. So I always say about our beers that if you try them blind, you just give them to somebody and say, drink this beer. There you go. Nobody drinks Big Drop and thinks they're drinking a 7% New England IPA. That doesn't happen. But if somebody drinks a Big Drop and you say, well, you know, how strong do you think that is? People, oh, I don't know, you know, 3%, 3.5%, something like that. And those two are great examples, the Pale Ale and the IPA, the Pine Trail and the Paradiso, where they have won awards in blind tastings against full strength beers. They're just really good, well-balanced, light versions of those styles. Great for every day. I mean, obviously they're sessionable beers. You can drink them till the cows come home, but just good for thirst quenching. And then the stout, the Galactic Stout, that is the first beer that we produced back in the end of 2016. And that was the beer, like I said, I prefer, generally speaking, darker beers. And that was the bit you just could not buy. There was no such thing as a non-alcoholic stout. It didn't exist. There was one brand that said it was a stout. So it was from Portugal, but they coloured it with caramel. It wasn't a stout at all. They just made some fizzy liquid and added caramel to it. So I don't count that as a stout. That's not a stout. Yeah, and anyone who would listen to me back then was like, why the hell are you making a non-alcoholic stout? I mean, who drinks stout anyway? And I was like, I drink stout. And they're like, yeah, but non-alcoholic stout. It's like, yeah, I want to drink non-alcoholic stout. And so that was the first one that came out. And I'm really glad that it was, because I am obviously extremely biased, but it is a cracking beer. The recipe hasn't changed for 4 or 5 years at all. It's won an absolute ton of medals.
It has. It's really done well in terms of its growth and then its ability to actually collect some medals along the way. And knowing that I was talking to you, I have actually written up that review that will go live around the time this one goes live. And I'll link that in the show notes at tipplezero.com/session05. So if you want to check out the review of the Galactic Milk Stout, it'll be there as well. But in terms of the Milk Stout, actually, it's one of kind of my favorite styles of beer, given the history it's had. It kind of came from those early 1900s when it was given to laborers and people who were quite ill as an energy drink, you know, air quotes, energy drink, and then hilariously given to mothers after childbirth. So that was quite a funny piece around stout. I just love the history behind it.
Nothing like a restorative milk stout after childbirth.
It's just a good one to have, isn't it? But do you think the consumer taste, because I know that was one of my key things when I saw there was a big heavy stout, or a heavy mouthfeel stout, I should say, from you guys, it was, well, what drives you to do that? And knowing that you love them, that makes sense. Mm. But in terms of the success of the product, do you think it was driven by people knowing in the UK that it is quite a regular beer to drink? Like, they've all got Guinness over there, which is quite heavy. Do you think it was the tastes which helped it succeed?
Again, I'm conscious that I'm patting myself on the back. I mean, I think first and foremost, the fact that it's a good beer helps. When I thought I was probably onto something in terms of a business idea, I was at a conference for landlords, you know, managers of bars and pubs and stuff. And there's a beer writer based in the UK called Pete Brown, who's a really nice guy. And he stood up in front of all these people and he said, right, I'm going to surprise you today because I'm going to talk about non-alcoholic beer. This would have been 2017. And everyone like moaned and groaned. And he said, I'm going to do this because for the first time, I feel able to actually talk about three non-alcoholic beers. And the Big Drop Stout, I think we only had two beers out then. It was that and the Pale Ale, I think. But the Big Drop Stout was there. And he said, the primary difference between a beer and a glass of water, pint of beer and a pint of water, is that if you drink a pint of water, you don't want another one because you're not thirsty anymore. If you drink a pint of good beer, then you want another one. That's the difference between water and beer. And this, he says, holding up the Big Drop Stout, is the first non-alcoholic beer that I've ever drunk and then immediately thought, yes, I would like another one of those. And I was like, bosh, boom, there we go. Pete Brown says that. We're not done yet, but we're on our way. And that's it. It's a good beer. But more broadly, what we try and do with our range is we're talking about doing for non-alcoholic beer what craft beer did for beer. One of the things that craft beer did for beer is introduce a range. So if you look at a good craft brewery, you go in, they don't have three beers. They've got 10 or 15, and they'll have a core range that they know that they're going to sell through this good 4% pale ale, and they know they're going to sell through this good 5% lager. So they've got a core range, but they experiment and they give people choice and options and different flavors. And so that is what we've always tried to do. In the UK, it's easier because we're all, you know, most of us are based here. That's our, this is our home market. But when we launch in a market, we always say we want to do a minimum of three. We don't want to go into a country and say, yeah, we're going to launch with one, because that's not who we are. That's not what we do. And so we are working hard to ensure that in Australia, that range, it will expand. So it won't just be those four beers. It will expand. And so the stout's just part of that. It's just part of the portfolio.
And I think in terms of expanding the range, I have had a few questions about the sour and whether that forms part of any of your plans to make its way down here. I reckon I'd be in quite a bit of trouble if I didn't ask that question.
I can tell you that the sour is probably not going to be the next one. The sour is funny because it divides the room, the sour. And I don't like sour beers. I went to Belgium on a weekend break with my wife a few years ago. And I was like, right, this is where they make the great sour beers. Let's go to this bar, specializes in sour beers. They did a tasting flight. There was an education piece. I liked none of them. I mean, it's just not what I want to drink. But again, it goes back to the sink. Some people do. So we will provide a sour. Is it going to come to Australia? Probably. Is it going to come in the next 12 months? Probably not. Sorry.
So what's on your list to get us next?
Then I'd be in trouble with my marketing person who would tell me off because she would tell me off for spoiling the surprise.
And in terms of the range that we've got down here, in terms of the Pine Trail Ale and the Paradiso themselves, for people who are still new and getting into that range, into the Big Drop range, how would you describe them both to someone coming to them for the first time?
Yeah, sure. So you've out of the four, you've got the lager, as I said, which is a, you know, easy drinking, not hoppy at all. So just straightforward light lager, but refreshing, good barbecue drinking. Then probably the next one up in terms of flavor and aroma would be the Pine Trail, which is like that. That's a sort of classic British pale ale. It's more bitter than what you might call a US West Coast IPA. It's got bittering hops, but that makes it in and of itself very refreshing. Don't think that you drink it and you'd feel like you were sucking a lemon or anything. That's not it. But it gives you that nice little bit of bitterness on the back of your throat that just makes it quite refreshing. You know, if someone says to me, oh, what should I try first in the Big Drop range? I would usually point them in the direction of the Pine Trail. That's a good one to start with. And then the Paradiso is more of that US West Coast style of beer. So there's a bit more fruit in it. So it's not as bitter. So you've got a bit of mango, citrus in there. We make it with Citra hops. So that's a really refreshing one, juicy one. That's really nice. That's just starting to overtake the Pine Trail as the biggest seller. Pine Trail's been out longest, so it's got more listings than the Paradiso. But that style of beer is incredibly popular. And then right at the other end of the scale is the Galactic Stout. It's a lovely beer. It's nice. It's really well balanced. A lot of stouts, the problem with a lot of stouts is when people brew stouts, they think they have to do stupid things with it. So they put licorice in it or they smoke it or they, you know, and it's like, oh God. And then they brew it to 8%. And it's insanely hard to brew a well-balanced 8% beer, whether it's a stout or any other style. So I think one of the reasons that our stout does so well is that it is well balanced. So there's chocolate notes in there. There's definitely coffee in there. It's got a really good mouthfeel to it. Would I drink it while I was doing a barbecue? No, I'd drink the pine trail. But actually, if you're sitting down in the evening and you're, you know, watching some TV or reading a book or something, that's a good one to sit down and indulge yourself with.
That's quite funny because that's how I've mentioned both of them. So the pine trail and the lager are kind of barbecue beers. And I think I went for the stout was more of the Netflix and chocolate sort of beer when you're sitting at home and you want to relax and wind down for the evening.
Yeah.
And it really sounds like they both have their own little niches to follow through with and have kind of people enjoy.
Yeah. And it goes back to this whole point, which I always say about Big Drop, which is we're about giving people choice and different flavor. So wherever you are in your day or in your week and you think, oh, I want a beer. Oh, hang on. Do I want the alcohol? No, I don't want the alcohol now. Fine. I'll go and have a Big Drop. But whatever time of day it is, you're going to have a Big Drop that you're going to like flavor-wise and that fits with the occasion that you find yourself in, whatever that may be. Yeah, that's just what we're trying to do.
That's a really important point of just giving people the choice to make the call of, well, I've got to drive today or I've got to drive tonight or I've got to get up early in the morning. So I want a non-alcoholic option and just have something which we've kind of spoken about for the duration of the podcast is that it just has to taste good.
Yeah, this is it. It's like this at the beginning. Again, sorry, I'm bang on about this. It's getting boring, doesn't it? But people are like, non-alcoholic beer, it all tastes rubbish, doesn't it? I was like, yeah, it does. So what if we made some good non-alcoholic beer? Yeah. Think what we could do. And they're like, no, it all tastes rubbish. I'm like, no. That stuff tastes rubbish. We're going to make good stuff. And they were, no, but it all tastes rubbish. And they go, oh, for God's sake. Right. Okay. I'm not talking to you anymore. You go away over here. Let me go and make this stuff. And then you try it. And then we'll talk again. And that's still the challenge that we get. That's still the challenge that we have. But I think broadly speaking now, as you work in the drinks industry, you understand now that there are good non-alcoholic beer options. Of course, Big Drop is the finest, but you know, there are other non-alcoholic beers are available and there are good ones. There are still rubbish ones. What does wind me up actually is, and this happens a lot in the UK now, is that you have a brewery and they're a good brewery. They make good beer, good alcoholic beer, but they see the non-alcoholic beer and they're like, oh, we need to do one of those, don't we? Yeah, right. Okay, quick. We need it. Right. And you can imagine the boardroom phones down. Steve, the brewer, we need a non-alcoholic beer. You know, and you can hear Steve, the brewer, rolling his eyes going, oh, for God's sake, really? Do we? Yeah. No, the chairman said we need a non-alcoholic beer. Right. Okay, fine. We'll do it. Right, lads. Right. The idiots upstairs have said we need a non-alcoholic beer. Let's whack one out. And then because it's a good brewery, you know, it gets shelf space, it gets some press, it gets some attention. You try it and it's like, well, this is rubbish. And all that's doing is continuing people's view who try that non-alcoholic beer is rubbish. And it's not anymore. It doesn't need to be rubbish. So that's what makes me cross.
I guess there's always a space for people to take the opportunity. But I do feel like when you're the bigger brewery and you haven't got that ability to be nimble and change like someone like a Big Drop does, it's almost like that sit back and wait just a little bit to make sure that you've got it right so you don't actually hurt yourself in the long run. And like you said, I think there's kind of a little bit of that jumping at it a bit, just a smidge too early, because a lot of the big guys, like you said, aren't quite there yet. Whereas if you look at some of the, or most of the craft guys, they're all really, really producing some good beers.
Yeah, completely, completely. And that's it. And I welcome breweries, whether you're purely non-alcoholic or whether you're alcoholic with and you want to put a non-alc out, I welcome that, because I'm definitely with the, you know, a rising tide floats all boats kind of mindset, as long as the beer you're putting out is good. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the key. That's the key. Don't put out rubbish. But you wouldn't put out a rubbish alcoholic beer. So don't put out a rubbish non-alcoholic beer. And there's not just Big Drop, but other brands have shown they don't have to be rubbish. So they can be very good. So yeah, that's where I am.
Absolutely. And I think before we finish up, I don't think I'd be able to let you go without asking you what your second favorite, because I know what your first favorite is, being the stout. One question around what your second favorite beer in the range is.
So you can't get it anymore. I'm just looking around to see if I've got a can, because it was one of our collaboration brews. We did a collaboration set, a four-pack collaboration set with four breweries, one in Finland, Norway, Sweden, and Iceland.
Wow.
But the guys in Finland with Johnny, our brewer, came up with a rye IPA. It was beautiful. I mean, it was dark gold, red kind of color, grassy notes, wonderful hopping, good bitterness. I still dream about that beer sometimes. It sold out very, very quickly, put it that way. Just a nice sort of twist on an IPA. So you had the hops, but there was a bit of malt there and a bit of a twist to it. It was lovely. That one, number two. Unfortunately, you can't get it anymore, even in the UK. So maybe I should have a word with the guys and we should re-release it.
It sounds perfect. I do look forward to seeing the new range when they drop down here. And in the meantime, I think I'll reach for a Paradiso tonight. I've got a few in my fridge. I found them. The distribution of that beer is starting to grow. That one had a similarly limited distribution locally here, but it's now growing, which is great. Yeah, it's been really great to chat with you today. And I learned a lot about the background to Big Drop as well. And it's been good to learn a little bit more about it and to hear about how it's looking to move forward.
Been an absolute pleasure. Always a pleasure.
I really hope that you enjoyed today's episode with Rob and you learned something new about the Big Drop range or just the way the industry is progressing. And it was awesome to hear that in the UK that pub groups are starting to really embrace non-alcoholic drinks. And I really hope that that comes down to Australia and we start seeing that push into venue as well. But if you are looking for information on the Big Drop beers, you will find them over at tipplezero.com/session05. And there you will find information and reviews on the Uptown Craft Lager, the Pine Trail Pale Ale, and the Galactic Milk Stout. So until next time, I hope you have a great rest of your week and you find some amazing non-alcoholic drinks along the way.